Indiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
It is 6 minutes after the top of the hour, and welcome to a brand new week of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some buds. By Blackthorn Golf Club. Make sure you get that Blackthorn card, a great value at Blackthorn Golf Club. Goshen Heart and Vascular. Be the hero your heart deserves. Visit GoshenHeartAndVascular.org. And by Laban Insurance. It's the agency that rocks. See why at LabanInsurance.com. My name is Darren Pritchett, sports director, WSBT Radio. He is Eric Hansen, and he is the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. Hope you had a wonderful weekend. Hope you're enjoying this beautiful Monday. And we are ready to talk to you about these and other things, including the NFL draft wrapping up over the weekend and the Fighting Irish. Well, they were shut out on Friday, and a couple of guys went on Saturday. We had some free agent signings. The big news, Josh Adams, the Irish running back, not drafted, but he has found a home. We'll get into all the details on that coming up in a matter of moments. A couple of thoughts on a story from last week. Nick Watkins decided to transfer, the Irish corner. Now opens up a spot on the depth chart. Who's going to fill in? Who's going to take advantage of Watkins leaving? Also, you're going to hear from Quentin Nelson. He was on Golic and Wingo this morning on WSBT Radio, talking about his new home, the Indianapolis Colts. So you will hear from Quentin coming up in just a couple of moments. Our My 5 question of the day, since this is the final day of April and there is no South Bend Cubs game today, I will offer the top 5 storylines that have developed around the South Bend Cubs after the first month of the season. We'll do that coming up in a little bit. Also next hour, a former Irish football player having some success on the diamond. More on Josh Adams. The Cubs doing some things that we haven't seen in a long time against one team in the month of April. We'll explain what that's all about in just a little bit. Rapid fire and more, all coming up on Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. So on a day like today, we actually have nice weather, warm weather. Does the Tribune just move outside on picnic tables and work? Do you do anything special on a day like today?
I played hooky.
Did you really?
Yeah, I was actually scheduled to be off. I didn't trick them or anything. They knew that I was not going to be there.
So you're on your computer on the back porch then today?
I was on my back porch yesterday, and it was...
It was
glorious. Yeah, there's no computer.
Good for you.
There's this big yellow ball in the sky that I was fascinated with, and really? I was just kind of soaking that in.
I see. Well, that's a very, very good choice, and let me know when you figure out what that particular object is.
Yeah. It's been a while since I've seen it.
My goodness. All right, so here's a quick recap of the NFL draft involving Notre Dame players. We talked about this on Friday, but just as a reminder, Quentin Nelson went number 6 to the Indianapolis Colts, Mike McGlinchey to the Niners at number 9. On Friday, we thought there might be two guys that could be taken in the second and third rounds. That ended up not being the case. No Notre Dame selections on Friday, and then on Saturday in round number 4, Durham Smythe goes to the Miami Dolphins. Wide receiver Equanimeous St. Brown had to wait all the way until the 6th round before he was taken by the Green Bay Packers. And then free agency after the draft, the Bears signed linebacker Niles Morgan and defensive lineman Andrew Trombetti, and the Philadelphia Eagles signed this guy.
Now the Irish go to the run. Do they ever? Breaking an open field. On the run. It's Josh Adams, one man in pursuit. On the run. Hello, end zone. Here he comes, and he's in. Josh Adams busted 73 yards.
Here's a handoff. Running into open field is Josh Adams. Can he do it again? Inside the 35 and the 20. And they finally, no, they don't get him. He goes in. The remarkable Josh Adams.
Fantastic. So Josh Adams had a huge year for the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame as he racked up 1,430 yards, 6.9 yards per carry. Now, November was a whole lot different in terms of production compared to September and October, but still all in all, one of the great seasons in Notre Dame history in terms of a running back carrying the football. But at the end of the NFL draft, seven rounds went by, including Mr. Irrelevant, and Josh Adams was not selected. Now, he was ultimately signed by kind of his hometown team, the Philadelphia Eagles. But, Eric, 20 running backs were taken in the 2018 National Football League draft. Josh Adams was not one of them. First, how surprised are you that he was not drafted?
I would say mildly surprised. The wild card was how his medicals turned out. You know, he ran a sub 4.5 40 at pro day with a foot injury. Now, he was kind of vague about his foot injury, didn't run at the combine. And he wasn't sure whether he was going to have surgery with it. And I think all that really clouded. Then you start kind of going back through his history, and he didn't miss an entire game in 2017, but he missed halves. He missed sections. You know, you look at his number of carries the week after the only game that he carried in his career of 20 carries or more was the NC State game of 27, the end of October. The next game he carried five times, and there was some kind of issue with being burnt out from exams and so forth. Then the next week it was six. You know, and he's had some injury issues every year he's been at Notre Dame. Nothing super serious, but enough to kind of slow him down. Had the serious knee injury junior year in high school. And so again, with this foot injury that popped up, that wasn't reported, that popped up in the springtime, I just think people worried about his, you know, what was it enough to take a chance on him? Certainly he's a high character guy, so that's not a concern. But, you know, how much does his game translate to the pro level? And you kind of get iffy translation there, although, you know, I certainly would, you know, if I were a GM, I certainly would have thought about taking him in the late rounds. But that injury history, especially when running backs don't last that long, I think that became a concern. So,
remember at the combine, you were there to ask questions to Josh Adams.
Absolutely.
And I felt like that some of his answers really didn't help his cause. He was very vague about a lot of things. Now, maybe he was giving totally different answers to NFL teams.
Mm-hmm.
But the optics just weren't very good with some of his comments. And didn't really want to talk about injuries. Well, something happened in November, and we obviously know that defenses altered their game plans. They were bound and determined to not let Notre Dame run the football successfully. They were going to force Notre Dame to throw the football. And Eric, as we saw, the copycat system started after the Miami Hurricane game, and the Irish had trouble adjusting throughout the rest of November. There were just a lot of red flags with Josh Adams, with injuries in the past. Possibly the foot, which still could need surgery, some people believe, sometime during the offseason. And just with the vulnerability of running backs, they have such a short shelf life that with the number of carries that Josh has had, the injuries, the missed snaps, for whatever reason, that just leads me to believe a lot of teams are really scared off, not because of anything that has to do with his ability to run the football. I think it's everything else, because he's capable of being a good running back of the National Football League. I'm not sure a starter, but a capable sub at the very least, but there are just many things outside the lines, I think, that have people concerned. It has nothing to do with character or anything like that. He's a great kid. We know the things he did in the classroom and away from the classroom here. I just think all the injuries and the number of missed snaps had to be a big concern for these teams.
Yeah, he didn't miss in the last 2 years. He didn't, and maybe in his whole career, looking it up right now, he only had one game in his career where he didn't carry at all. But there were parts of games, or he was ineffective because of the injury. So his toughness isn't a question. It's whether he's durable. And, yeah, I don't think his answers helped him at the combine. And, again, he may have been very different with the teams, but he says, yeah, I'm healthy, I'm ready to go. Well, he wasn't healthy because then the next day he doesn't run the 40 and he doesn't do any of the jumps. He did do the bench press at the combine. So why tell the media that? Why not just say, you know what, I've got some issues I'm not comfortable with sharing. I am sharing them with the team. I don't know whether I'm going to run tomorrow. You know, McGlinchey and Nelson didn't end up running, but they both said, hey, look, you know, I think one of them got a tight hammy warming up and the other one ran and then it got tight. You know, they were very upfront about it. And I think, you know, I honestly think the way Equanimeous carried himself at the combine didn't help his stock because he came off as a guy that, you know, really seemed like he had programmed answers. And, you know, I think he should have come in with a little bit more humility. The whole show on cable TV with the family and being part of the documentary. You know, if you're a middle round draft choice, I don't think you do those things. I think it's not a great look. I think if you're a first round draft choice, if you're Saquon Barkley, I guess you could get away with that. But, you know, Equanimeous wasn't there either. I know I'm getting off from the Josh Adams point, but you know, I mean, the one thing is he's going to have his chance. It's with his hometown team, Philadelphia, and we'll see how it goes. Notre Dame has had four true juniors come out that are running backs. Bettis was a first rounder, and the next three were all undrafted. The only three of the 16 three and out players that Notre Dame has had that went undrafted are all running backs, and that's
Sherwood.
Sierra Wood was not. He was a four and out.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. Yeah, he was a four and out. Yep. This is guys that were true juniors. Hmm. So Darius Walker, George Atkinson III, and Josh Adams. You know, and you can't say, well, all the running backs in the Brian Kelly era, maybe they're not so good. Because CJ Procise was a third rounder. I think Theo was a fifth or sixth rounder. So, I mean, there were guys that got drafted. But, you know, Josh, a lot of times, again, when you were kind of trying to dig and find out, well, why did he only carry five times against Wake Forest? You know, hopefully he had a better answer for the GMs and the decision makers than, you know, what was given to us on game day.
The exam answer was a unique answer that you've never really heard before.
I've never heard that for any player. I think that's probably something that is taxing for Notre Dame kids because they have those midterms in October, but I've never heard that as a reason for somebody coming out of the game. So it was just different. But again, I mean, there's a lot to like about Josh Adams, and he's in a very similar spot to where he was when he was coming out of high school. He was a three-star kid. I remember you and I were watching him in August training camp his freshman year and fully expecting that he was going to redshirt and that Dexter was going to be the guy that was going to be used if they needed somebody, Dexter Williams. And I saw him run and I go, wow, he's way faster than I thought he'd be, you know, being a three-star guy and only regionally kind of recruited.
Two things. Number one, you wonder if he got some bad advice from his representation. The way he handled those combine questions.
I think so.
And second of all, hypothetically speaking, you're not an NFL executive, but I'll let you take your best shot at this. Throughout his career at Notre Dame, he had really good offensive lines in front of him.
Right.
And his freshman year, there were some pretty good weapons in the passing game. Eric, do you think there's some questions to how good he actually is, considering the offensive parts he had around him? I mean, I think we're at the point, he wasn't even drafted, so I feel like that's worth asking at this point. If he's taken to the fifth round, I wouldn't ask this, but the fact he went undrafted, I think you have to overturn kind of every particular situation just to see if we can find something.
Well, I mean, the one thing about him is when you look at the big picture numbers, I mean, he's among Notre Dame's all-time leading rushers in a career, all-time leading rushers in a season, and all-time leading rushers for average. In fact, there was a point where he was going to break George Gipp's record, which was set in 1920. That didn't happen because there was a big fall off at the end of the year in terms of production. But if you're a GM and you're looking at Josh Adams' numbers, you say, oh, wow, 1,430 yards on 206 carries, pretty good. But then you look at Georgia, 53 yards on 19 carries. Wake Forest, 5 carries, 22 yards. That was the exam.
And the last five games, total, 74 carries, 261 yards, 3.5 yards per carry, no touchdowns.
Right. So you're looking at teams like Miami that have future pros, Stanford, future pros, 20 for 49, 16 for 40 against Miami. LSU, lots of future NFL guys, 15 for 44. Georgia, bunch of guys got drafted, 19 for 53. And then you see Boston College, 18 for 229. NC State, 27 for 202. They had some pros, though, on their defensive line. They didn't have them in the back seven, but they sure had them in the front four.
They sure did.
You know, and so that's what kind of makes you scratch your head, because you say, okay, Temple and Boston College and Miami of Ohio, you know, he had 8 carries for 159 yards against Miami of Ohio. He could have set maybe an NCAA record had he just stayed in for that. So that's what, you know, then you start to say, will his game translate? Will he get caught in the backfield? Because Josh is a home run hitter, so he would have 2-4-71, 2-1, you know?
Yeah.
And then in the games like Georgia and stuff, he didn't have that big, long run to make his average look good. And so, and the other part is wasn't a guy that was, if you think about who the receivers, running backs that catch the ball on Notre Dame's roster right now, if Josh Adams came back, and you said, who's the best catching running backs, who would you put? You'd put Tony Jones Jr. first.
Correct.
You'd put Avery Davis and Jafar Armstrong ahead of Josh. I don't know about Dexter in terms of precise route running, but Dexter I've seen catch the ball pretty well. You know, Josh wouldn't be in the top three. He might be fourth or fifth. So I don't think that helps him, because that's part of the pro game. Could he learn to do that? Yeah, I think he can, but I don't think it came naturally to him. Great in blitz pickup, good blocker. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's just when you throw that injury thing and there's so much of it, that durability issue on top of it. Again, not questioning his toughness because he played through a lot of it. But the durability part, I guess, just colored it too much where people just said, it's just not worth it.
Number 6 and number 9 pick of the draft were blocking for him.
That's true.
Significant.
But
that's significant.
Yeah, but I think he did pretty well when that line wasn't blocking as well the year before.
Okay.
But he's had some good linemen in front of him. That there's no question.
Here is curveball number 2 over the weekend involving a Notre Dame player.
Brandon Wimbush with a long count. Stands in, takes a look, throws downfield. He's on target, on the run across the 40, speeding down the sideline inside the 50. Still going inside the 20. Equanimeous St. Brown goes the distance, and Notre Dame takes the lead.
At one time, Equanimeous St. Brown, at least by a couple of outlets, looked like a first-round draft pick. And then this year, following an awkward season number-wise, kind of fell into that second, third round range. I thought he would be taken before the fourth round when this was brought up on Friday. He was taken in the 6th round by the Green Bay Packers. How do you explain this one, Eric?
Well, again, I think with Equanimeous, if he interviewed with the GMs as he interviewed with the press, and he wasn't unfriendly or anything, it was just, you know, he got asked a lot about the television show that he was a part of. Now, if he's not on that TV show, then those questions aren't there. And the LeVar Ball family gets, and he says, yeah, I can see that comparison. I mean, great for him that he's honest about it, but that's not the comparison I think you want.
He was also on that HBO show, too, with Brian Gumbel.
Right.
The family was featured.
Right. So, I mean, I think that hurt him. And there was, I think, the thought internally at Notre Dame that maybe he was soft last year. That he wasn't willing to dive for footballs. He wasn't, you know, willing to, you know, do the dirty work. He, you know, he certainly was a capable blocker, but he could have been better. Those were, you know, I did some radio and people asked me about him and I didn't give him a ringing endorsement. Mm-hmm. I think he has an awful lot of talent, but I think, you know, he's got to remember where he came from, which is, you know, working hard and that kind of stuff. His dad, when they were little kids, took them to Compton because he didn't want them to be soft. He wanted them to experience having to play against kids that were fighting and scratching and clawing, and he wanted his kids to play like that. And I think Equanimeous kind of came off like a country club guy a little bit, that, you know, he didn't want to get his uniform dirty. I don't think he played like that the year before, but I think last year he did, and there are enough people that saw that where they didn't fall in love with the combination of size and a guy that runs a sub 4.5 40, because he ran well.
Well, on a piece of paper, he's a top 3-round pick.
Right.
But, measurables.
But you can say that, well, Brandon Wimbush's year didn't help him, and I would agree with that, but I think Equanimeous was part of the problem as well.
Finally, in the fourth round of the draft, this guy was taken by the Miami Dolphins.
Here is Wimbush, a lot of time, open receiver, on target inside the 15. That time, Wimbush shows his stuff, threading the ball in softly over the defender, and hits Durham Smythe.
And here's Wimbush, ready to throw, end zone throw. It's caught, it's a touchdown, it's Durham Smythe on the payoff end.
This is a toolbox guy. He does a little bit of everything. He's a handyman. He blocks for you. He can catch the football. He might be one of those classic players. He may not be on a scale of 1 to 10. He may not have a lot of 10s, but he has a lot of 7 and 8s in his game. He's not going to be the wide receiver type tight end that's going to be split out. He's going to be an inline blocker. And, Eric, I think he's going to be a really, really good pro. He's not going to be an all-pro, but he is going to be one heck of a number 2 tight end.
Well, he surprised me that he went that high. I thought fifth round would probably be the highest, but I thought he was going to get drafted. Usually those guys that go down to the Senior Bowl and perform well there, they get a lot of endorsements from, you know, guys like Phil Savage, who runs the Senior Bowl, and a lot of GMs and decision makers get to see them down there and scouts. And he performed well in the practices and in the game down there. So I thought that would help him. But, you know, he helped himself fourth round. That's amazing. And I retweeted the tweet today. You know, it goes back to 2003, the last time Notre Dame had a opening day starting tight end that did not get drafted, and that was Billy Palmer.
Well, 2 months ago, I mentioned to you, I think that Durham Smythe will be drafted before Josh Adams. But not in my wildest dreams would I have thought Smythe in the fourth and Adams would not have been drafted. That's not the way I saw it. I thought they were both going to be kind of close together in the fifth round. But Durham's Senior Bowl, I think, made the difference. That put him over the top, and Josh had those red flags. And sure enough, Smythe goes in the fourth, and Josh does not get drafted. Who would have thought that? Pretty remarkable. And the Bears have signed Niles Morgan and Andrew Trimbetti. Probably going to be tough to make the roster. Maybe Niles makes it as a special teams guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's coming off a shoulder surgery. I don't know. I haven't had a chance to talk to him recently. He thought that he was going to be 100% by June. So probably that first mini camp, he's not going to be able to do much but run around. But I think they'll want to hold on to him to see what he does when he's healthy. I would give him a chance to stick on that roster. I think he could make as a special teams guy.
Might be a Harry Hiestand influence there.
Yeah, with those two. And that's a great compliment if he's saying, hey, look, Niles was really good his junior year. didn't have quite the senior year, played the whole year with an injury, you know, didn't fuss about it, and then got the surgery after the year. So
Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett, Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Coming up next, you're going to hear from former Irish offensive lineman, newest member of the Indianapolis Colts, Quentin Nelson. You can hear Colts football this fall every game on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Look at that, he hit the ball. Gotta get some free steak.
Your hosts are Eric Hansen.
Let me have a Diablo sandwich, a Dr. Pepper, make it fast. I'm gonna hurry.
And Darren Pritchett.
I want a hamburger. No, a cheeseburger. I want a hot dog. I want a milkshake. I want potatoes.
You'll get nothing and like it.
It is 25 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues from 96.1 WSBT. Great to have you with us on this Monday evening. We're talking a little football in our opening hour of the program. We just discussed Josh Adams not getting drafted, being signed by the Eagles as a free agent. Equanimeous St. Brown had to wait till round six before he was picked by the Green Bay Packers. And Niles Morgan and Andrew Trimbetti signed free agent deals with the Chicago Bears. Now let's talk about the future of Notre Dame football. Eric, a quick thought on a recruit who is going to announce tomorrow night and any chance he chooses the Fighting Irish.
Well, there's a young man by the name of Quinn Carroll. He's an offensive tackle from Edina, Minnesota, which is probably a big hockey hawk.
Oh, that's the pipeline high school right there, the Hornets.
6'6", 280 pounds. He's ranked as the number 33 overall player in the country by Rivals, which is right on the edge of four or five stars. He would be the top recruit in this class by those ratings. And he is picking tomorrow night at 10 p.m. Between Minnesota, the hometown school, Ohio State, Penn State, Virginia Tech, Wisconsin, and Notre Dame. But he has an offer sheet that looked, you know, Alabama, Auburn, Florida, Florida State, Georgia, Miami, Michigan, USC, Oklahoma. You want me to go on?
Sounds like he wants to stay close to home.
I think he's going to end up picking Notre Dame. That's the heavy favorite there. That would give them three really good offensive linemen in this class, with a favor to add another kid from Cincinnati, Zeke Correll. And then they might be done with offensive linemen at that point. So it's a testament to Harry Hiestand's legacy, and it's really also a testament to Jeff Quinn, what he's been able to do since taking over for Harry Hiestand, and getting people to believe that he is a guy that can keep that legacy going. And I think that one of the people that have really talked for Jeff Quinn, talked in his favor to these kids because he's been around when a lot of them have visited, is Mike McGlinchey. You know, Mike has been there a lot of the practices. So has Quentin, but Quentin was doing, I think, a little bit more traveling. Mike was at a lot of the practices and able to talk to kids, and I think Mike is sold that Jeff Quinn is going to, you know, be very good in that role for Notre Dame, and that they're going to keep the run they have with offensive linemen, and it's showing up in recruiting.
It's a great culture.
Yeah.
You talked about guys always coming back. Even a guy like Aaron Taylor comes back. And you just think about some of the people Harry Hiestand brought in that were not a member of the Notre Dame family. There's just a great culture, and let's face it, these kids notice the National Football League draft. They notice Quentin Nelson and Mike McGlinchey going in the top nine.
And they also notice that Zach Martin and Ronnie Stanley haven't been busts, that they got drafted very high and ended up absolutely confirming those high draft picks. Zach Martin's been a Pro Bowler all 4 years since he's been drafted 16th by the Cowboys.
And if they ever need him to play tackle, he'll be ready to go.
I think he could play tight end if they asked him to for a few downs.
I think you're probably, well, they actually might need one if Jason Witten gives up football for the broadcast booth, possibly going to Monday Night Football, where they're going to double his salary from what he was making with the Cowboys. That's pretty hard to pass up. A great 15-year career for Jason Witten with the Dallas Cowboys. Well, our guy Quentin Nelson, the former Irish offensive lineman. Boy, I hate saying that. Former Irish offensive lineman. He was a joy to watch for this football program. The Bulldozer is now a member of the Indianapolis Colts. And again, you can hear Colts football this fall on WSBT Radio for the first time. And Quentin was on WSBT Radio earlier today. It was Golic and Wingo. And here is what that conversation sounded like.
We're delighted to be joined now in Golic and Wingo by the new first-round pick of the Indianapolis Colts. That is guard Quentin Nelson. Quentin, first of all, congratulations.
Congrats, man.
When you finally heard your name called, what was the first thing that went through your mind?
Hey, guys, thanks for having me on. When I got the call, I was just so happy and excited. Looked down to my phone and saw the Indianapolis area code. And I was at my lake house in Indiana with a bunch of my teammates, family, and friends. And everyone was going crazy. Just when I said thank you so much, everyone started screaming in excitement and joy. So we had a great time.
It is a very cool thing, especially you know you're going to be a high pick, right. But when it actually happens, that moment. So in that moment, Quentin, who would, when you were told that got the call and you knew it, who was the first person you thought of?
I don't think I really thought of like one person. I mean, I was with everyone that helped me get to where I am today, and there's a lot of people to think of, but to get picked by the Colts and be so close to Indiana still, it was a big time moment for me.
Yeah, you know, you played your college ball at South Bend, and you stay there. You go try to protect Andrew Luck, which has been a problem for the Colts the last few years. But Quentin, one of the things that I love about the draft process is I get to read up on so many of these players and some of the stories that are behind them. And one of the things that I found fascinating about your story is just how uber competitive your entire family is. And there was a story in there about the 3-on-3 basketball that you guys always play with your family in your driveway. And the teams are always the same. It's your mom and your dad, your two sisters, your brother, and you play 3-on-3. And one of the things that was in there was a game in which you guys were going at it, and your mom actually took a charge and broke her wrist. And on the way to the hospital, you guys were arguing whether or not she was moving her feet. It was a block or a charge. Is that true? Did that actually happen?
Yeah, that actually did happen. She broke her like wrist in three places. Yeah, we are really super competitive. It was definitely a charge.
I was waiting for that.
That's awesome.
Quentin Nelson joining us, number 6 pick overall by the Colts. Again, Colts just about dead last in rush yards per rush, and last giving up 56 sacks. So really counting on Quentin Nelson. And Q, talking about a coach. And take us inside a little bit on the development. Harry Hiestand, who's a coach there, who's coached a number of first-rounders and guys in the NFL. He went on to the Chicago Bears. Talk about that relationship and just how much Harry helped you in your development through your years.
Yeah, he definitely helped me a lot. I wouldn't be where I am today without him. He developed me into the player I am today 100%. He just cares about you so much as a man, as a student when I was in college, and of course as a football player. And he really made me into the man I am today too, because if I was ever slipping up in anything, he'd always like tell me to do better. And his attention to detail when we're watching film or we're out on the practice field is second to none. He always has a coaching point that is actually like a really good coaching point. It's not like he's just saying things that don't really make sense. He's so good at bringing the togetherness of the group together, and he gives 100% every single day and is a great motivator for everyone on the offensive line, and just one of the best coaches I've ever been around.
Well, obviously he did something right, Harry Hiestand did. He's now with the Bears, but the Notre Dame head coach, as we're offensive line coach, as we're joined by Quentin Nelson, because you went 6th and Mike McGlinchey, your Notre Dame teammate, went 9th. First time we've ever had two offensive linemen from Notre Dame go in the top 10. Was there in any way, a shape or form, as the uber-competitive guy that you are, a little rivalry or a bet with you and McGlinchey as to who would go first?
Nah, there wasn't a bet or anything. It's not really like that at all. We both support each other so much, and we were both so happy for each other when each of us got drafted, both in the top 10 and the first two offensive linemen off the board, and we were ecstatic for each other.
Is there a old lineman that you saw play back in the day a little bit that you kind of model your game after?
Yeah, there's an O-lineman named Zach Martin about a year before I got there. And I would watch film on him and then go out on the practice field and try to emulate what he was doing on the film that I had just watched because he was like one of the best to ever do it, and just so easy, and his technique is amazing, so I just try to copy that as best as I can.
That would be a good person to copy,
because sure,
he's about to get the Brinks truck backed up to him. You worry about your first contract, yeah. But then if you want to get the next one, do exactly what Zach did, and yeah, you'll be just fine.
Yeah, without a doubt. What did we got about a minute left. What did Frank Reich tell you? What did your head coach tell you on what his expectations for you?
He just said that he's really excited, and I'm going to love what we're going to do there. We're going to go fast. We're going to slow it down a little bit, and we're going to run the football. And to give, because that's how we protect Andrew the most, is by running the football, establishing that run game. And I'm just really excited to get to work with the rest of the offensive line.
Real quickly, before we run out of time, have you spoken with Andrew Luck yet?
Yes, I have.
And how'd that go?
It went great. He's a great guy, and just by hearing his confidence and his demeanor on the phone was special, and I'm excited to play with him.
Well, I'm sure his first words were, thank you.
Yeah,
when he heard
my good kiss for all that old line that they protected.
All right, Quentin, congratulations. Thanks for being with us, and best of luck doing what you can to help the Indianapolis Colts get back into the postseason.
Thanks, Quentin. Nice job, man.
Thank you.
Quentin Nelson, the former Irish offensive lineman, now property of the Indianapolis Colts. He was on Golic and Wingo earlier today on 96.1 WSBT. Well, two things stood out from that conversation. Number one, the 3-on-3 family basketball game story that Quentin was referring to was written by the South Bend Tribune's Mike Varell. So, Mike, nice job there. And number two, he mentioned watching the NFL draft and having a party at his lake house. I thought it was mom and dad's lake house, but maybe with the signing bonus, it is now his lake house.
I think Quentin could probably afford to buy the lake at this point.
I have a feeling you're probably right, but it sounds like mom and dad's going to keep the lake house and support the Irish on Saturday and head down to Indianapolis to watch Quentin play on Sunday. How cool is that? Could not have worked out any better.
Great family. I got to know the parents a little bit, and they're unbelievable. The dad, Craig, is an incredible interview.
He would be fun to have on the show sometime.
We should get him on the show. I think he would do it.
Yeah, that's as good an interview as going to get from Quentin. He is so laid back and just not really overly interested in talking, but he did a beautiful job there. When he was asked who he kind of looked up to or watched, yeah, I thought he was going to say, well, no one really. And he said, Zach Martin. What a great answer.
Well, the thing about Quentin is there's no pretense. There's a lot of times somebody from the media, and I'm sure I'm guilty of this, they ask you kind of an awkward question, and sometimes you try to make them happy and you say something like when they said, who was the first person you thought of? For him, there was not one person, and he wasn't going to make one up to fit that answer.
Or the Mike McGlinchey
bet question, which was ridiculous.
Yeah, that didn't work out too well. All right, Golic and Wingo tomorrow morning, 5 to 10 on WSBT Radio. And this fall, hear every single Colts game on 96.1 WSBT. It is 12 minutes in front of the top of the hour. We'll get to our My 5 question of the day coming up in just a matter of moments here on 96.1 WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My 5 question of the day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Today, we will be counting down the top five storylines that have developed around the South Bend Cubs after the first month. Darren will be answering those questions, and we'll start with number five.
Number five is of the 15 position players that have been on the Cubs roster at some point, nine of those are hitting below 246. Now, it's been cold. That's a factor. So let's see how things play out. That's why I put it low on the list. But the highest drafted position player on the roster is a seventh rounder in 2016. That's Michael Cruz, a catcher. So there aren't those high-end prospects on the roster right now. But right now, the offense has been a little hit and miss.
Number four.
Infielder Jared Young, 15th round pick. Before he got hurt April 17th with a hamstring, he was leading the Cubs in almost every offensive category, but in 32 at-bats, he was hitting .406 with a .472 on base, two homers, five RBI, and I would anticipate he would return to South Bend during this upcoming road trip.
Number three.
Miguel Amaya, a guy to come watch at Four Winds Field. He's 19 years old, a catcher from Panama. At Eugene last year, as an 18-year-old, hit .228 with a .266 on-base percentage. Right now with South Bend, .292 average, .370 on base. He leads the Cubs in home runs with three, and he is tied for the team lead in RBI with 10. I would say his defense is still a work in progress at this time, but the offense has really started to show up so far this year with South Bend in the Midwest League. Very exciting player to watch, Miguel Amaya.
Number two.
The big three in the rotation, and they are three guys that are not considered two of the best prospects on this team in terms of the pitching staff. That's Brendan Little, a first-round pick last spring, and Jose Albertos, the number three player in the Cubs system, according to Baseball America. These three, Javier Assad, Corey Abbott, and Ricky Tyler Thomas, have been terrific. They have combined to go 5-2 with a 1.47 ERA. So if you get those big two going at a good pace, this could be a really outstanding starting rotation in South Bend.
Darren Pritchett is counting down the top five storylines that have developed around the South Bend Cubs after the first month. Number five, there are 246 hitters nine times. Number four, Jared Young has a hammy, but when he's healthy, he's Babe Ruth.
Nine times.
Number three, team sensation Miguel Amaya. Number two, the big three rotation surprises. And the number one storyline that has developed around the South Bend Cubs, other than Darren's announcing after the first month, is
the struggles of 19-year-old pitcher Jose Albertos, who I just mentioned, number three prospect in the entire Cubs system, according to Baseball America. Keep in mind, he's only 19 years old. He's from Mexico, so he probably has not pitched in the cold conditions like he did early on this year. But in four starts, his ERA is 27.00. He has lacked control. He had six walks Sunday in an inning and two-thirds. One of his starts was down in Bowling Green, Kentucky, where cold was not a factor and had just a really rough go. But you want to give him the benefit of the doubt early on due to the weather we have had. But right now, it is a bit surprising to see one of the best prospects in all of minor league baseball having a tough go. He's only 19 years old. He's in the Midwest League. The ERA is going to get better. I think everyone fully expects him to get better over the next couple of weeks, and maybe that next start will occur this week that'll kind of get him rolling. But that's a guy talked about by a lot of people that cover the Cubs system, just off to one of those starts right now in South Bend.
And that's the My Five question of the day. We'll be back with more Sports Bean in a minute.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
Well, Tom Noy will have a column on Jerry Tillery, who had pretty good spring and may be the number one draft prospect for Notre Dame next year. Later in the week, I'm going to have a feature on Shane Simon, the young man from New Jersey, who may be the most likely freshman who hasn't arrived yet to get on the field and contribute this year at the Rover position. And of course, Darren, there's always much, much more.
All right, very good. Eric, thank you very much. We will talk again tomorrow. I'll be in Iowa. Or
is,
heaven.
Is tonight Dancing with the Stars? Is Arike on tonight?
I think it is.
Okay.
You and Stiers know all that stuff.
I've seen it once, and I was forced to watch it.
Well, you're watching it because you have to give the updates. I'm not watching it. I got a hockey game to watch tonight.
Seriously?
Bruins Lightning.
Okay.
Let's go Bees. They'll be in South Bend January 1st. You better start doing your work.
There may
on
be
the
hockey
Bruins.
Players on the Dancing with the Stars.
There all better not be.
Yeah.
For the hour, WSBT South Bend.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malt
Backless again. Backhands. He scores!
Down to the corner. Jablonski. Three is good.
Andrews steps in. He's going to throw deep for T.Y. He's got it.
Flips to Jenkins. Three for the win. It's good. Villanova wins it.
He dives. It is a touchdown. New England wins.
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row.
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
7 minutes after the top of the hour, Sports Beat continues from 96.1 WSBT, brought to you by Budweiser, Goshen Heart and Vascular, Blackthorn Golf Club, and Laban Insurance. Sean and Darren in studio today. A rare occasion.
It's good to be here. I get this time of year. I get used to just hearing your disembodied voice now, with no visual. But you're back in town for at least a little while, anyway.
I'm assuming disembodied is a compliment.
Well, you know what I mean. I hear your voice, but don't see your face. Okay. So
sounds like I'm in two pieces or something.
Yeah, maybe that was a little bit extreme.
I'm like Mr. Potato Head.
That's right.
Or Humpty Dumpty.
Your eyes and ears and mouth go everywhere.
That's exactly right. All right, we're going to talk a little bit of everything. We got some baseball to get to, a little more on Josh Adams not getting drafted, rapid fire. All that coming up here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Just a little nugget to start things off, as we have the chance, of course, for several years to watch Torrey Hunter Jr. play football for the University of Notre Dame. He was also on the baseball team, but he did not get many at-bats. He was a pinch runner. But, of course, he is the son of one of the great center fielders in Major League history, specifically with the Minnesota Twins, spent some time with the Angels, Torrey Hunter Sr. I mean, he won numerous gold gloves. I can't remember the total, but it was a good amount. I want to say it might have been 12 or 13, but I could be wrong on that. But anyway, Torrey Hunter Jr., I think that concussion that he suffered due to that brutal hit in the Texas game might have changed his thought about the NFL, because there was a time he was thought to be maybe a third-round pick in the NFL draft as a wide receiver. He decided to play baseball. The LA Angels drafted him, and now he has made it to the Midwest League. He is playing for the Burlington Bees in Burlington, Iowa. And on Sunday, yesterday, a breakout performance for Torrey Hunter Jr. He went 5-for-5 with 3 runs scored as the Bees lost to the Kane County Cougars 9-7. He is now 7 for his last 9. The problem is he got off to a really rough start this month, and since he has gone 7-for-9, he has raised his batting average from 125 to 243. So in two games, he's raised his average 118 points, man, which you can do in the month of April due to limited number of at-bats. You can change your batting average in a hurry. So good for Torrey Hunter Jr., 7 for his last 9. The whole Midwest League is off today, and we're going to start crossover play as East meets West, and South Bend will go on the road to Cedar Rapids and Peoria this week, while Burlington will be kicking off a road trip against the East, May 7th through the 9th, against the South Bend Cubs. So Torrey Hunter Jr., barring a change of some sort, will be playing for Burlington in South Bend May 7th through the 9th.
Excellent. So that's coming up about a week from now then.
That's exactly right.
Good deal.
So looking forward to having Torrey Hunter Jr. back in town. I can't imagine he's going to go one way or the other. He should be Burlington for a while.
You would think.
Just to let him settle in, get the at-bats necessary. At his age, there's no reason to move him down or up really at this moment. In fact, if you move him down, you send him to extended spring training, because short season baseball hasn't started yet. That doesn't start until after the draft in June. So I don't see any reason why Torrey Hunter Jr. will not be with Burlington when they come to South Bend May 7th through the 9th. So
good deal.
Torrey's a dad now.
Is he?
Married right after football.
Okay.
I believe they have a little one now. So a lot to talk about with Torrey Hunter Jr. when he comes to town in a couple of weeks. But 5-for-5 yesterday. Nice going. Torrey scored 3 runs for the Bees against the Kane County Cougars. We'll talk a little bit more about the South Bend Cubs in just a little bit. But now we're going to spend a couple of moments on the National Football League draft. And from a Notre Dame perspective, this was the biggest storyline, I guess, from a negative standpoint. It's hard to say that 6-9 were Notre Dame guys. That's the number one story. But in terms of a story that didn't turn out the way everybody thought, it centers around this guy.
Here's a handoff. Running into open field is Josh Adams. Can he do it again? Inside the 35 and the 20. And they finally, no, they don't get him. He goes in! The remarkable Josh Adams!
1,430 yards as a junior. 6.9 yards per carry. Seven rounds of the NFL draft. 20 running backs were taken. Josh Adams' name was not mentioned. Well, Eric and I kind of kicked around our thoughts on this in the first hour, so I'm going to open the curtains for you, Sean, allow you to kind of chime in on your take on Josh Adams not getting drafted and having to settle to be signed as a free agent by the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles, his hometown team.
Yeah, and I've heard, and I'm sure you have too, a lot of the talk about should he have come back, should he have stayed at Notre Dame rather than declaring for the draft? Would he be in better shape had he done that? But, I mean, I could not disagree more with that thought. Even though he didn't get drafted, I just, when you look at the fact, he rushed for over 1,400 yards last year, and he did it behind probably the two best running backs that he's ever going to run behind. And this is not a knock on Alex Barrs or Liam Eichenberg, but there would have been an obvious drop-off. You're talking about two top 10 NFL picks to two other guys who are good offensive linemen, but they're not in that classification just yet. So there would have been a drop-off there on just on the left side anyway. I think it's still going to be a good line, but nonetheless, probably more important than that, he had the injury concerns. And that probably caused, it sounds like, that's really what cost him. I think you could argue that maybe the fact that he did run behind such good offensive linemen and he'd had just the monstrous plays, maybe that worked in reverse on him. But I think the injuries had to be the big thing. The foot issue and just the fact that he was slowed down. And, I mean, we talked about it during when his Heisman candidacy came up. The fact that at one point what he had missed – and he was still out there playing every day, but I think he had missed the equivalent of like 2.5 games or something like that because he had to keep leaving games early. And some of it was warranted. Notre Dame was up enough that he could come out. But still, it had to be a concern. And just you look at the fact that running backs game in, game out, take the biggest pounding of anybody. And then you add on the fact that he already had an injury concern. So I don't think there would have been any benefit at all to Josh Adams coming back for another year. It's unfortunate that he ended up going undrafted, but he's going to have opportunities. He signed this free agent contract with the Eagles. I think he's going to have to maybe prove to be a little bit more versatile, maybe be a kick returner or something like that early on if he wants to make a team. But he's going to have opportunities, and it's just up to him now to hopefully stay healthy and make the best out of them.
The good news is, this has nothing to do with character like it does with some
right,
players.
Right.
Great kid. That's been proven, the things he did around the Notre Dame campus. It just came down to too many red flags. The injuries, why he wasn't getting more carries, why he was leaving games. There are just a lot of questions. And what I mentioned to Eric, his combine press conference just didn't come off well. He acted like there were no problems. Well, if that's the case, why weren't you playing?
Why weren't you out there more?
He was burnt out from exams was the reason why he didn't have success and didn't play a lot in one of the games. So there were just a lot of almost built-in excuses. And I think for NFL teams, they just didn't feel comfortable, obviously, with the answer because he's good enough to be one of the top 20 running backs taken. I think we can all say that. It was just too many red flags. And you're right, the shelf life of these running backs, it's not very long.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan, even though Saquon Barkley is a great talent, taking him at number two. If you get 6-7 great years out of him, is that worthy of being taken at number two? I'm not sure. You can always find a running back to me later on in the draft that may not be as explosive or talented as Barkley, but someone that can get the job done for you. So it just feels like NFL teams were scared off. Again, he was a guy that was injured in high school, too.
Right.
And he may need foot surgery, we've heard, sometime this summer. Don't know if that's going to be reality. That's just one of the rumors that came with some storylines centering from this NFL draft. But it had to be multiple things for him not to be taken at all. I think that's just the shocking thing. And that's what I brought up to Eric, too, something you mentioned. He always had great people around him, great offensive linemen, And I kind of thought about something today when I was kicking this around in my head. Well, is it McGlinchey and Nelson maybe costing him? They were too good. When I talked to someone that's heavily involved in NHL scouting at the Frozen Four, they brought up Cale Morris, the Irish goaltender named Richter, award winner, best goaltender in all of college hockey this year. I asked, is there any chance the NHL might want to sign him as a free agent after his sophomore year? Or are they going to wait till after next year? And, and this person, and this is one person's opinion, said, I think most NHL teams want him to play another year because the great defensive group he had in front of him this year will not be there for the most part next year. Now, there's parts still back, but a good majority of the guys that protected him are gone. And they want to see what he's going to be like without an A-plus stellar group of defensemen in front of him. He's going to have a lot of young guys in front of him.
Right.
So it's going to be a little bit of a different story. So there's an example of people around Cale, the NHL, again, one person's opinion, thought that they want to see what he's like without those guys in front of him. And that's what made me think of this, that could Nelson and McGlinchey, and going back even further, you had a weapon like Will Fuller out there when he was a freshman, and DeSean Kizer. Are all those guys making him look better? We all know he's a talented running back, but I'm just trying to pick through everything right now to try to figure out how he's not one of the 20 running backs that were drafted over the weekend.
No, I mean, it's a valid point. And obviously, like when you look at, if you compare Emmett Smith to Walter Payton, I think it's consensus Walter Payton was the better overall running back. And the knock on Emmett, even though he's the NFL's all-time leading rusher, is he played behind that offensive line. It's almost kind of a chicken and the egg thing. You still have to be able to run through the holes, regardless of what holes are there and whatever else. And both of those guys were durable, but at the same time, it can obviously work against you. And I think it's a valid point because of the fact that he had such a dominant, especially left side of the line, but a dominant offensive line to work behind. And you look at, like when you look at some of those GIFs and you go back and look at some of the video of the games, I mean, the holes that were there for him to run through were just massive. He didn't have to make a whole lot of guys miss. I think the thing that is probably was his greatest asset as a running back was his patience, but I also think that worked against him, as we saw like in the Miami game and in some of those things, that his patience worked against him because he was waiting for that hole that never came rather than just get through the first hole that was there.
Last year, talked to a former running back who played collegiately and in the NFL, and he felt like sometimes maybe Josh was trying to hit the home run too much.
Right.
Late in the year. Rather than just taking the 3 or 4 yards, he went for that home run carry and possibly was being too patient at times trying to carry the football. And when you've got an 8-man front, you better make some quick decisions.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And now, I will say this. He's got an opportunity. He signed a free agent contract with Philadelphia. And I think of a guy like Ryan Grant, the Notre Dame running back. He was an undrafted free agent, signed originally with the Giants, ended up with the Packers. He had one pretty good year at Notre Dame, a 1,000-yard season, but he didn't have the kind of overall career that Josh Adams had, and he ended up having two really good years with the Green Bay Packers and a third year that was pretty good as well. So, I mean, just because he's an undrafted free agent doesn't mean he's not going to have opportunities and doesn't mean he can't turn it into something. And like Josh Adams, Ryan Grant was hobbled by some injuries in college too, and he ended up kind of becoming a lot more durable by the time he got to the NFL and worked on his conditioning and a lot of different things.
I've said this from the first time I saw Ryan Grant have success with the Green Bay Packers. That was my biggest miss. Never would have guessed Ryan Grant would have been a starting running back in the NFL with an elite team at that time, the Green Bay Packers. I totally whiffed on Ryan Grant, and he had a good go for
I don't think anyone
a short
saw
amount
that
of time. And, you know, we had this conversation about a couple of the players. Kind of my tiebreaker at times is, do I want my team to draft this person or that person? And the two guys from Notre Dame that I said no to were EQ and Josh Adams. EQ goes in the 6th round. Josh Adams was not drafted at all. You had One of the rapid-fire questions, I believe, on Friday, would EQ be taken before the fourth round? And I said yes. I thought he'd be taken in the late third round because of his measurables. I thought the measurables would get him drafted then. Well, I was dead wrong there. He went in the sixth round to the Green Bay Packers, and I already had one of my Packer friends, diehard, say, all right, give me the scoop on Equanimeous St. Brown. And this is the way I described him to my Packer friend. I go, he needs to be better running routes. Mm-hmm. I think he needs to compete more on the football field. He needs to win battles for the football. But in terms of measurables, he's exactly what you're looking for in the National Football League. And I said, if I had the best way to evaluate him, in just my personal opinion, at this point, he's still unproven, but I feel like he could become a poor man's Demaryius Thomas.
Yeah.
That's how I picture him.
I could see that. Not quite as physical, probably, as Demaryius Thomas. But
he could be, though.
Yeah,
I feel like he could be.
He has all those things there. I think it's a matter of mindset with him and just getting it figured out. Now, if he gets opportunities, he's going to have a pretty good quarterback throwing him the ball, too, a guy who knows how to find some receivers. So I think that's a blessing in disguise, I think, for Equanimeous St. Brown going to Green Bay, being paired up with Aaron Rodgers, if he makes the most out of his opportunities. That could be a really good situation for him in a year or two.
And I'll just throw this in. I think the Bears did a wonderful job. I loved Anthony Miller coming out of Memphis. I think the Bears have found a real outstanding football player for Trubisky to throw to. I think that's going to be a huge draft pick. So put me on the spotlight there that if Miller doesn't turn out to be anything, I'll eat it, but I really...
Write it down.
That's a guy I mentioned before the draft that I really liked at the wide receiver position, a guy that's not going to go in the first round that I would like to see my team draft. Well, the Bears got him, and I have a feeling they're going to be pretty happy about him.
After everyone beat up the Bears last year for their draft and what they did trading up to get Trubisky and then getting a Division II guy, a tight end in the second round and all these different things, they really had what on paper looks like a really good draft. So it's going to be fun to kind of see how that works out for them over these next couple of years and keep building.
Bears fans have reason to be optimistic. Not saying 10-6, not saying 8-8, but they could be very close to turning the corner. We'll see how the new head coach handles, but he's an offensive mind, and they kind of need that right now. Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett with you. Sports Beat on WSBT Radio, 24 minutes after the hour. To Major League Baseball, the Chicago Cubs owned the Milwaukee Brewers in 2018. The Brewers were supposed to be the team that had the best chance to knock off the Chicago Cubs as NL Central champions. They brought in center fielder Lorenzo Cain from the Kansas City Royals as a free agent. They traded for Marlins outfielder Christian Yelich. But right now, they are 1-7 against the Chicago Cubs, and the Cubbies shut out the Brewers at Wrigley Field this weekend, and the Cubs shut out the Brewers 5 times in 8 games.
Five times.
First time a major league team has shut out an opponent 5 times in April since 1910.
Man.
And the Brewers entered Wrigley having won 8 in a row. And the Cubs, whose offense didn't do a whole lot in that series, well, you don't need that when your starting pitching takes control like Chicago did, and Sunday was capped off. Tyler Chatwood, 7 innings, 2 hits, no runs, even picked up an RBI base hit. And walks have been a huge problem for Chatwood since joining Chicago. 19 walks in 21 2/3 innings. A little better against the Brewers. 3 walks in 7 innings. So quite a weekend for the Chicago Cubs, taking care of the team that's supposed to have the best chance to knock them off the top of the NL Central, the Milwaukee Brewers. And here's what Cub manager Joe Maddon had to say yesterday.
Well, that shows you what he can do. I mean, when he knows where that baseball is going, he's got that electric kind of stuff, really a lot of movement in the zone, a lot of ground balls. You saw the ground ball. There's a strikeout in him. There's a ground ball in him. Those are two great qualities for a pitcher. He's going to keep getting better. There's a couple little things, you know, him and Hick are still dealing with or working on, and they're getting to know one another better. But love his competitive nature. He comes right after hitters. I loved it.
Joe, 3 shutouts, 1 earned run in all 4 games. That's amazing.
It is. I didn't realize all of that. I mean, I knew it was pretty good, but that's pretty astonishing. I looked at the board on the walkout. Those numbers, they popped up there. Comparing us, 73 in another year. yeah, give our guys credit. We know that we knew that coming in, that the starters can be that good. Kind of adverse circumstances weather-wise, but we did a really nice job with that. We caught the ball, too. I mean, even up that last ground ball by Yelich at Addy, that was hot, and it came up at the end, and he did that beautifully, man. Defense has been outstanding this whole series. The pitching, of course, has. The bullpen, really good. And we've got the quality of bat we needed. So it's kind of a nice recipe. Oh, he's going to. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind he's going to do that. The ball's going to start going in the seats when things warm up a little bit. Love the approach. I mean, that's what we've been preaching with him. He's done a great job with it. It hasn't manifested itself to the fullest yet, but it will. And in the meantime, he's playing that on defense. He's been, like I said, the base running's gotten better. The defense is always good. You can see the throws. I know you can see the throws from up top. They're much stronger. Just, I think he's playing well. He's just not hitting to his capabilities yet.
That question was about shortstop Addison Russell. Picked up a key RBI against Milwaukee. And it's the first time the Cubs have won four in a row despite scoring three or fewer runs in all four games since. Pretty famous year, 1908.
Huh.
So the offense is doing just enough right now. They are riding the coattails of the starting rotation that had a lot of hiccups over the first couple of weeks. They've all rounded into form together. Quintana was really good. Darvish got better.
Finally had a good start.
And Chatwood finally didn't walk too many guys, gave himself a chance to win. And here they are. You take a look at the standings, despite being kind of ho-hum for a couple of weeks. Pittsburgh in first at 17-11. That's not going to continue. The Cubs have snuck back into second place, 15-10, a half a game back. And then you have St. Louis and Milwaukee both getting swept over the weekend. St. Louis by Pittsburgh, Milwaukee by the Cubs. And St. Louis and the Brewers get passed by those two. St. Louis 15-12 a game back. Milwaukee 16-13 a game back. So if the Cubs get a hold of this lead and they start building an advantage, I just don't see how anybody is going to catch them. I thought they're a team that could win 100 games this year. They may not get there. I thought St. Louis could win 90. The Brewers could win 88. I still don't believe in the Pirates right now, despite how great they have played so far. It's 17-11. So the Cubs have kind of sleptwalked. They've had some hitting and clutch moment sequences. The starting pitching hasn't been great, and here they are at 15-10.
I read something interesting that Tom Verducci wrote at SI.com today, and he had a ton of different stuff in there, but it was about Kyle Schwarber, and we've talked a lot on this show, and you always hear about launch angle, and apparently Schwarber had the worst batting average in all of baseball against fastballs last year, and it was in part due to the way he started with his hands too low, and he was not able to make good contact against fastballs, and apparently he's brought his hands up a little bit, reduced his launch angle. And we've talked about how he's hitting better this year, and apparently that has a lot to do with it. Because he's a guy who obviously has a lot of power, but he's changed that up a little bit. He's hitting fastballs something like 70 points higher so far this year. I think he hit like 214 against fastballs last year. So an interest change, and it goes back to what we talk about with this launch angle and better contact. With the increase in velocity in Major League Baseball, if more guys ditch this launch angle thing and just go to more contact, it's like, hey, you can actually score some runs when you do that, when you put the ball in play.
Best way to take care of launch angles is put the fastball higher in the zone.
Yeah.
Elevate the fastball will cause that launch angle a whole lot of problems.
Yep, exactly. And that was part of what Verducci was writing about with Schwarber as well. Because his hands were starting so low last year, he couldn't touch anything that was up around, you know, really between the belt and the chest for the most part, that was a fastball.
Cubs and Rockies at Wrigley Field tonight. The happiest guy on earth, John Lester, will start for Chicago tonight.
Mr. Brightside.
My goodness. I just want him to smile just one time, just out of nowhere, just start grinning from ear to ear. All right, 29 minutes in front of the top of the hour. We have rapid fire coming up next from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. 23 minutes in front of the top of the hour, Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Hey, grab your clubs and get spring savings right now with Blackthorn Golf Clubs. Blackthorn Card. Right now, it's available for only 99%, which gets you up to 80% off the regular rate to play Blackthorn, including cart every round, every day, all season long. Plus, with that card, on Mondays and Tuesdays, you pay only $29 for green fees, and that includes a cart. For more information or to set up a tee time, call 574-232-GOLF. That's 574-232-GOLF. Or visit blackthorngolf.com today. The Blackthorn Card, up to 80% savings only at blackthorngolf.com. He's Sean Stiers. I'm Darren Pritchett. It's time for Rapid Fire on WSBT Radio.
Let's fill in the blank with this first question. Darren, after seeing both Quentin Nelson and Mike McGlinchey go in the first round of the draft last week, the Irish player with the best chance to be drafted in the first round next year is blank.
Jerry Tillery, defensive lineman, Notre Dame. I think if he puts together a really solid season, there's a good chance. But from what I've read already, it is a very deep interior defensive line group as of right now.
Okay.
That can change. But to me, the name that really sticks out is Jerry Tillery, coming off a tremendous season last year. If he builds on that at the D-tackle spot, I expect Tillery to be have his name called on Thursday next year in the NFL draft, at the worst on Friday.
I would think so, too. I would think that if he keeps progressing, especially at the rate he progressed last year, that he's no worse than a third rounder, and I wouldn't even think that he would go that far, regardless of how deep it is. But it's between him and Julian Love. And again, there's another guy, Love, who, if he keeps raising his game, I think they both have a chance to be All-Americans next year, especially as good as we think that this defense can be. And they should be two of the stars of that defense. The last Irish, I was amazed by this, the last Irish defensive lineman to go in the first round, Ronaldo Wynn, 1997, 21 years already. And the last Irish cornerback was Tom Carter 25 years ago. So it's been a while for defensive linemen and corners to go in the first round for the Irish.
Just Wynn to the Jaguars, do you remember?
He was. Yep, okay. He was. Wynn went to the Jaguars. So, I mean, so the odds against him, I guess, are slim. But at the same time, I do think that those two have the best chance. But I go with Tillery as well because, again, I think he has a chance to be even more disruptive, sliding over to defensive tackle, and a chance to just really, really do a lot of good, disruptive things up front for the Irish defense this year. Okay, another Notre Dame football draft-related question. After seeing Equanimeous St. Brown fall to the sixth round, do you buy or sell that he should have returned to Notre Dame for another season?
Well, I like what you said earlier about Josh Adams, because coming back to Notre Dame would have done him no good.
Correct.
You don't want to waste any more tread on the tires
right at
the running back position. EQ, that is an interesting question. I had not looked at him from that standpoint. My gut feeling is, I would have to say, knowing what I know now, yes, because there was a time he was considered a first or a second round pick before last year.
Exactly.
And there were a lot of things that went into that, but I think he still has to be a better route runner, compete more when the ball's in the air, and those are things that could have been, I guess, stressed to him more during another year at Notre Dame. You know, normally I don't say after the fact come back, but after sixth round with his measurables, I mean, that's the type of height and weight you're looking for a wide receiver in the NFL. I might actually go against the trend here and say maybe it would have done him a little more good to come back for 1 year to reestablish his value, but he didn't have that information at the time.
Yeah, see, and that's you wonder what kind of information he was getting, because similar to DeShone Kizer last year, they both were projected to go. Now, Kizer only fell to the second round, not to the sixth like Equanimeous, but at the same time, Kizer was originally, he could have been a top 10, a top five guy, and then he fell off as the whole draft process went on. And just a couple of months ago, Equanimeous St. Brown, I mean, he was a borderline first, second round type guy. But as it turned out, the pool of wide receivers ended up being so deep, and we kind of touched on this last week, there wasn't a big separation between any of them. So it seems like he ended up being just another guy in a deep pool of wide receivers. So I agree with you. I think that the way that this whole thing, now hindsight is obviously 20/20, but the way it turned out, I think he would have been better off coming back too. Speaking of drafts and come back, go, and the whole thing. The NCAA, of course, wants to now allow college basketball players to be able to return to school if they go undrafted. So my question to you, Darren, is do you buy or sell that the four big sports, as far as draft choices go in college, basketball, football, baseball, hockey, should the NCAA institute a more uniform draft policy? Because right now, especially, it's kind of all over the place as far as what the rules are with drafts and can you play, can you come back, and the whole thing.
I think hockey almost has to be in a different category because of the age of the players and the system in place for the NHL. So,
well, now, in hockey, you basically get drafted and then you go to school. Is that right?
I'm trying to remember off the top of my head.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
No, that's okay. There's an age in which you can be drafted, and if you're not drafted, then you can't be drafted again for like four more years after college, so people can sign as free agents in between.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say, is it age? Well, Cal Peterson, I think it's 18, possibly. I could be wrong on that, but there is a system in place, and it kind of works for hockey for the most part. In terms of basketball and football, see, to me, you go to the draft, and if you're not drafted, do we want to give him the right to come back to school?
Correct.
The problem is you miss all of spring practice.
That's
true. You're kind of not a part of the team anymore.
That's true.
You've moved on. Other people have taken your snaps at whatever position you have played. So if I can just simplify just to football for a second, I'm sorry. You made the decision. And you went through the entire draft process. You focused on being a pro player. These guys, a lot of them don't even finish up school. So all of a sudden, after the draft, and you've missed spring practice, you want to come back? I just don't agree with that. Everybody has moved on. You've made your choice.
Well, now, that's a good point. But again, isn't this whole thing, as we heard last week, isn't the whole point of being a student athlete supposed to be about college? So, I mean, shouldn't we make it easier for a kid to stay in college if he gets some bad advice from somebody and that's what he's basing his decision? I guess that's what I'm looking at. And a little more than a third, there were 106 early entry underclassmen for the NFL, and a little more than a third of them went undrafted. Now, the bulk of them, and maybe even all of them, have ended up signing free agent contracts, just like Josh Adams, and now Niles Morgan and Trump Eddy weren't underclassmen, but they signed as well. But so a lot of them have signed free agent contracts, but they really don't have another choice right now because they don't have a choice to come back. And I look at baseball where like a kid right out of high school can get drafted. He can say, no, I don't want to sign a contract. And he can go to college. And then you could even get drafted, depending on what your age is, you could get drafted another time before your junior year in college as a baseball player and still come back to school once again. So it's odd that all of these sports, and I know the sports themselves dictate a lot of this, but I think if the NCAA really wanted to put its foot down, it could change something. Especially now, I get what you're saying about spring ball. But again, you're basing a lot of that on whatever advice you're getting, and not all of that advice is always good.
I don't want to make this simplistic, but if you don't realize that you're throwing away a $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 scholarship, and it takes the NFL draft not going your way for you to want to come back to that, I'm sorry.
Well, but at the same time, now, because that's another thing that I heard with Josh Adams. Well, he should have come back and finished his. I mean, he can still come back and finish his degree. They're going to honor the scholarship. It's not like you just get thrown out. They honor those scholarships still, but I don't know.
You have a choice. Just like we have a choice, stay in your job or go to another one. And once you make it, that's pretty much it, unless you have a really nice former employer that lets you come back.
You do have a choice, but again, it's just the fact that across all these sports, everything is so different. In one sport, you can't get drafted, and another, it's so. And the, and like with hockey, for example, I go back to that, and like just kind of following Notre Dame a little bit more closely the last couple of years. In each of these last 2 years, they've had guys who were drafted, played at Notre Dame, and then they were the quote unquote I don't know the property or whatever you want to put it of an NHL team. And after, so then after they played, they went to that NHL team that had drafted them the year before. So the systems are just so different for everything.
Just as example this year, Dennis Gilbert, drafted by the Blackhawks, signed after his junior year. Andrew Ogilvy, undrafted, signed with Buffalo after his junior year.
Right.
So there's different ways to get to the pro level.
Yep. Exactly. Okay. I'm interested to see what you say on this. Well, I think I know what you're going to say, but we'll go with this. Do you buy or sell a moral victory for the Indiana Pacers taking LeBron James and Cleveland to Game 7 in their first-round playoff series?
I'm not a moral victory guy. No.
I had a feeling.
I know.
I had a feeling. And I completely agree with you, by the way.
I mean,
especially in pro sports. It's professional basketball. It's professional anything. There are no moral victories. You win or lose.
Just not into moral victories. Just never have bought into it as an athlete myself, or now in this position analyzing teams. I mean, there's always reasons to be proud of your efforts and excited about the year you had, like Notre Dame hockey. They didn't win the championship, but they had a wonderful year. Doesn't take away from the fact it stings losing in the national championship game. But, hey, the Pacers were not supposed to make the playoffs. They had a great year, what, 48 victories? Getting rid of Paul George made them better. Getting Oladipo, that turned out to be a glorious trade. And Oklahoma City has to be kind of kicking themselves right now. So the Pacers had a great year, but you had a chance to beat Cleveland.
Yeah.
And you're up one game to none. You stole game one in their house. So you can be really satisfied with your effort, but I'm just not going to get into the moral victory thing.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's professional sports. It's not Little League. Either you win or you lose, and I don't think there are ever moral victories. Maybe like Oladipo, did you see that thing that he texted one of the trainers or something right after the game, and he's ready to get back to work? And so maybe that motivates you a little bit. I don't think that's a moral victory. Maybe it inspires you, but I mean, again, it's pro sports, and how many guys on that roster are going to be back? So I don't know that a moral victory, losing a first-round playoff series, regardless of who it's to, especially the marathon nature of the NBA and all the series and getting through the season, I don't know how that's going to help you next year.
Fun year.
Yeah.
Not too sure about those Pacers yellow uniforms with Indiana and Pacers. That's one of the dullest.
Very old school.
And then there's Utah with like the old Astro Rainbow
colors
on their jersey.
I know.
Everybody's got their thing. That's rapid fire for today. 10 minutes in front of the top of the hour. 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. It is 6 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Sean Stiers, Darren Pritchett with you on WSBT Radio. Just to go back to your rapid-fire question about drafts.
Uh-huh. Excuse me.
For the NHL, to be eligible, players must be 18 years old by September 15th and under 20 years old by December 31st in the draft year. For college NCAA players that have been drafted, NHL teams retain their rights until 30 days after the player has left college. So that's Cal Peterson after he completed his junior year, in this case because he was drafted a year early. So that four-year window ended after his junior year.
Okay.
So the Sabres had his rights for 30 days. He decided not to sign, became an unrestricted free agent, and had an unbelievable year after signing with the LA Kings. He was terrific in the AHL. In the Kings organization.
See, that's crazy how that works, too. You can just wait 30 days, and anybody can sign you then.
We've had a couple of Irish players do that. Thomas DePaulia, forward, was drafted by Washington, wasn't happy with them for whatever reason, waited the 30 days, and signed with the Pittsburgh Penguins organization.
All right.
Many ways to get to a pro team in hockey. All right, South Bend Cubs have lost two of their last three. They dropped 2-3 to a Great Lakes team that was struggling. 9-4 the loss yesterday on WSBT Radio. The head scratcher, number 3 Cubs prospect, Jose Albertos, the 19-year-old. Inning in 2/3, 3 hits, 5 runs, 6 walks. ERA is 27 through 4 starts. Again, he's from Mexico, not used to these cold conditions. Let's reevaluate in a month. to see where Jose is. He's got the stuff. It's just been a rough go for him so far this year. And the Cubs open up a six-game road trip against two Western Division teams tomorrow. We're at Cedar Rapids Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. At least a 60% chance of rain each day. 80% 2 days.
Great.
And they're a Twins affiliate. And then we get a little Cardinals-Cubs Friday, Saturday, Sunday in Peoria, taking on the Chiefs at Dozier Park. So that's what's ahead for the South Bend Cubs. No baseball tonight. Back on the air, hopefully, tomorrow night at 7:35. We've had five games postponed on the road this year. None at home.
That's true.
And the rain's coming to Iowa.
Yeah. Man.
It's going to be a long couple of days, I have a feeling.
Springtime in the Midwest.
Got that right. It is now just about 4 minutes in front of the top of the hour on WSBT. Budweiser's weekday sports beat on WSBT Radio, presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. By Goshen Heart and Vascular. Know your numbers. Visit GoshenHeartAndVascular.org. By Lavitt Insurance. I'm sorry, Lavitt Insurance, the agency that rocks. See why at LavittInsurance.com. And by Blackthorn Golf Club. Grab your clubs and get spring savings with the Blackthorn Golf Club's Blackthorn card. Call 574-232-GOLF. We'll have another installment of the Golf Show coming up Saturday morning at 8 a.m. here on WSBT Radio. Sean, we'll talk to you tomorrow here on WSBT Radio. I'll be in Iowa. We'll talk to you then.
I'll talk to your disembodied voice at that point.
Look forward to that. It is the top of the hour at WSBT.